If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or your computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything that you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the free Anchor app or get to anchor.fm and get started. One love. What's going on, world? It's your man, Sean Black, back again with another podcast where Sean explains the world. Today, people, we are going to talk about music, specifically how, you know, the powers that be made music kind of a racial tool, man, like to keep people segregated. So let's go back to the start of like the American music scene. We got to take it back to roughly about the 20s, right? So the 20s, between the 20s and the 40s, we had what they call race records. And race records, if you don't know, were records that were marketed to Americans of African descent. The popularity of these records kind of grew though, right? It's like they were marketed towards Black people, but then these were like the records that could get everybody party jumping. So, you know, white Americans started consuming their music as well. But if you think about like how the powers that be had it set up though, they was trying to like keep people apart with the music. So, okay, look, you can party to this music, but you gotta only party with your people. And I don't know why that would be like a thing, like why you would feel like that would be something that you should do. Because just if you think about the idea that the record make you feel good, how could the people who made the record be around you and then you not, you know, have a similar style feeling? You dig? That just seems like a weird thought. Like, you know, you saying, yeah, your music is cool for me to dance to, but I don't want to hang out with you. That sounds like a weird idea to me, you know. I could be wrong though, you know. But yeah, so they was marketing race records. And all of the genres that it included at the time was blues, jazz, gospel, and then comedy records. And if you notice, right, those are like the markets in American music that, you know, surpassed all others. These is where your big artists came from. You had cats like Cab Calloway, Count Basie, right? Here's the thing, though. Glenn Miller was called the most successful artist of that time. He's called the most successful artist, the most successful orchestra leader, band leader of that period, of the race record period. The weird thing is, like, I grew up listening to Count Basie records, Duke Ellington, you know. I learned those when I was younger. I didn't learn who Glenn Miller was until, honestly, until I joined the band while I was in the Army. Glenn Miller has made some records that I think people dug for real, but I want to know what the tool was that they used to measure the success of the artist. Because I would believe that it would have to have something to do with influence. Like, I think that the influence would be a big part of how successful that the artist would be, or the band leader would be. And while Glenn Miller did make a big impact because he, you know, went into the Army, Glenn Miller did have some big records, man. And a lot of people will remember at least one of his records. In the 80s, they put one of his records called Swing, Swing, Swing on a Chips Ahoy commercial. It was the joint, the commercial at the end. It was like, Chips Ahoy's got it all, that commercial. So people would remember who Glenn Miller is from, you know, at least that record. But when you talk about just knowing like the names and the impact that people had back then, I think it's fair to say that Duke Ellington and Count Basie would have been more, would be considered more popular and therefore have a little bit more influence. And in my opinion, be more successful. Right. But that's just my opinion. My opinion obviously ain't the end all, but that's just how I feel. I feel like, you know, they had more influence, but I think that because it was the race record period, which in turn got dismantled and ravished by the Great Depression, I think that music era, it was a wild time for America and for the music. I don't know. I feel like Duke Ellington and Count Basie would be considered more successful. And I think it was just because Glenn Miller was, you know, a white dude that they considered him the most successful. People may have a problem with that opinion, but I just based on the way America is set up, I have to believe that that's the reality of it. And then we move on to like the rock and roll period. So like coming out of all of that jazz and, you know, that era, all of those people who were young when Glenn Miller, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, when these dudes was making records, they remember them at a time in their life where they was partying and, you know, kind of navigating the world, right? But then they went off to war. During the height of these records, right, during the height of these swing records, a war break out. And then the country got to stop a little bit because the country's at war, right? World War II. So during this period, what was happening is soldiers from different parts of the country, white soldiers and black soldiers, started sharing music with each other. And like, it's that thing. Like I said before, you know, my opinion is that the military brings people together. A lot of people don't believe that, but I've seen it with my own two eyes. So at war, and this is what you do at war, you share what you have from home with people from someplace else, and they do the same thing. So then you kind of develop a culture of understanding. So during World War II, people passing around music, they get back to the crib, and then in the late 40s, is like kind of the era where they credit the birth of rock and roll music. And while rock and roll music was big, right? It was like that, I like to call it freedom of expression music, right? So it was like, we just gonna express ourselves. But it was like a degree to which you couldn't, right? But at the same time, it was a lot of imported bands too. It almost seems as though the powers that be in American music felt like the American product was substandard. And that's in terms of like just sending their product to the world. It seemed like they more so brought the world to America, and then people kind of started focusing on world music versus American music. So you start getting dudes like The Who, U2, right? I think they was out then. You got the Beatles. And then when you ask the groups of those of that time that was coming from overseas, mainly England, you ask them who was their musical influence. It was always like some black dude. It's like, oh, I listened to Little Richard and, you know, his music changed my life. In Germany, they call it black music, actually. It's weird, but like, black people have always been expressing their ideas and emotions through their music, and people just gravitate to it because it's the story of realness in real life. But the powers that be don't want people who are non-black to consume the music because they don't like the effect that it has on the people. It makes the people feel free. And I don't understand why that's a thing, but it seems like throughout history, that's kind of been the status quo for music. You see in the race records era, right? Like, you know when that was. Everybody seen a movie about that period. Some people have lived through that. You know, they lived through that period. And they still here to tell about it. But they was keeping people divided by this music. They're like, okay, these people make some bomb music. But then I don't want these people. Or I don't want the people that look like me. These black people make good music. I don't want these white kids to consume it because it's going to make them buck the system. Okay. Then here come rock and roll. They said the same thing. So they left artists like Chuck Berry. Oh, you can play for, you know what I'm saying? You can go play for a black audience. They wouldn't let people play for integrated audiences. It's insane. But this is music like that's supposed to bring people together to ensure that racism continues to exist. They was, you know, not allowing the full embodiment of the music. And it's a shame because when you don't allow people to experience the music properly, then you lose, you know, you lose a lot because you got a whole generation of people who think that their music choices may be weird or off because they weren't allowed to practice how they wanted to. They couldn't listen to the music that they wanted to. Like, they would get a glimpse of it somewhere and be like, yo, I like that. I feel like when you use music as a tool for racism, you defeat the purpose of what music is supposed to do. Throughout history, we've known music to be important to everything that's happening, whether it's troops going into battle, whether it's ceremonies, whether it's celebrations. Music is the thing that's supposed to bring us all together. It's never supposed to divide people, right? It don't matter who you talk to, you know, any musician anywhere tell you that, like, music is supposed to be used as a tool to bring people together and make people feel good. So when you use it as a tool of divisiveness, then you're doing everybody who participates in injustice. So then after rock and roll kind of made its impact, right? And, you know, American soldiers have now taken it around the world from World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam. You know what I mean? Like, legitimately, that was like a thing. And like right at the end, close to the end of Vietnam, well, at the end of Vietnam, you saw the rise of a different genre of music. And it was a genre that was speaking the truth about the ills of American society. It was telling the story of people were fed up with just like kind of living in a system where they were being oppressed. When hip hop got started, right? It was just like this idea of like, we gonna tell the stories from our neighborhoods, from our standpoint, and people have to pay attention to them because they are stories. You know what I'm saying? And like, if nobody else don't rock with the story, we do at least, but we just gonna tell our story. And I can't imagine that Kool Herc was like, yo, this gonna be the biggest thing to ever hit the world. I can't imagine that. I would think that it probably was the idea of like, yo, this is going to tear America up, boy. This is going to put us on the map. You know, something like that. Now, I could be wrong. Kool Herc could have thought that it was going to have a global impact from this inception. But I can tell you that the impact it had was far greater than the impact of any other musical variety ever. When hip hop came, it didn't just come with music. Right? It wasn't just like, oh, come and listen to my songs and then go home and live your life. It wasn't like that. Hip hop came in and said, you should want to aspire to be greater than what you are right now. You dig? It said, this is what we doing. Can you keep up? And not all times was that negative, but it came with a whole culture. And when hip hop came with its culture, that culture included an art form, like, you know, visual art form. It came with dance, right? And it came with a vocal art form. And then it also came with a hand-eye coordination art form, right? So you had, like, you could be b-boying, right? Breakdancing. You could be a graffiti artist. You could be a DJ. You could be an MC, right? Or you could do all of them. Or you could not do none of them and just enjoy it. But hip-hop came in and was like, yo, we here. And, like, everybody's allowed to enjoy. It don't matter what you look like, where you from. Just come and enjoy the music because it feel good. There was no race constraints put on this. And, okay, well, nah, you can't. You know, we only going to push these records. Even though they was pushing records straight to, we only going to focus these records on the black community. White kids would drive to the community to pick them records up because those were the records that they wanted. You know what I'm saying? It made them feel good and it made them feel free. Like, so, but the impact of hip hop, not only was it big in America, hip hop was the first music to just transcend language and just be everywhere. You know, just think about when they did Live Aid in the 80s, like it had to have Run DMC or it wasn't going to be like a legit deal. You dig? It's nobody that could deny the impact of hip hop on a global market. I'm fairly certain that when Carl Kanai was designing his first clothes, he wasn't picturing German people running out to the stores to get it just because it feel like hip hop. FUBU, same thing. This is what hip hop did, right? Hip hop broke the rules for marketing. When they told you that you couldn't sell anything with hip hop because it was the language of black people in downtrodden communities. LL Cool J jumped on the Gap commercial, spitting bars with the FUBU hat on. That's hip hop. Name a product that you could buy now, right? That don't have some element of hip hop embedded in it, whether it's the music that you hear in the commercial, the style of lettering that they're using to get it done, the popping images that just jump in and out like hip hop videos used to do back in the days. All of the people that's tastemakers in all these organizations and all these companies, right? They grew up in the hip hop era. And because they grew up in the era that they grew up in, right, they learned each other. And not to mention, like, since hip hop has been around, we've had a few wars. And people from, you know, the backwoods of Kentucky, you dig? They got the opportunity to embrace hip hop. You dig? The people in Japan got a chance to see what hip hop can do. Just think about how these hip hop artists go on world tours. They the most booked. And it been that way. It's a language that says, we just want everybody to matter. It's a language that they can't touch. That's why they've been so afraid of it. But like, if we approach the world the way that hip hop approached the world, like saying, this is me in my rawest form. I'm just me. It's no preconceived notions. I'm not putting anything in front of me. I'm just me the way I am. And you just got to rock with me or not rock with me. But either way, let me know. If we approach the world like that, I think the world changes, man. Was hip hop there for you in when you had some tumultuous times? You know, was it hip hop that kept you from doing this one bad thing, or, you know, this bad deed that you were tempted to do? We have to really understand, man, that like, there is no more separation of people. We all from the same families, man. You know, hip hop was the bridge that brought everybody together. And you could tell just because of the fact that every single time hip hop made a rise, people was just like trying their best to get rid of it. Like, oh my God, it won't go anywhere, you know? And it got to the point where advertisers had to acknowledge it. So advertisers just started putting it in everything that you could get an opportunity to see or feel, right? It became prevalent in commercials. It became prevalent in print, you know? You had these design houses that have been designing for hundreds of years, that weren't at all thinking about what they could do with a black brand or what they could do with a hip hop brand. And they started bringing hip hop people in to help their designs. And they started bringing in designers who were familiar with hip hop, who frequent hip hop. And then slowly but surely, you start getting urban streetwear, right? You would watch television and products that they was trying to sell you. There would be, you know, a hip hop beat in the background, or, you know, people in the car rapping, or, you know, people in the restaurant rapping. But they was giving you doses of hip hop because they understood that the only way to really reach everybody is with a language that they can appreciate. Hip hop didn't come with, you know, aggression. And all of the negativity that you see surrounding hip hop is all conflated by the media. The media does a lot to try to tarnish the reputation of hip hop. But I could tell you that the media has been way more divisive than hip hop has been. You know? The media has put people on guard. Oh, look out for black people when they come into your neighborhood, because this is what they're looking to do. Oh, look out for white people when they come into your neighborhood, because this is what they're looking to do. Like, hip hop don't do that. R&B did that back in the days. Jazz, they did it to jazz musicians. Soul. Every type of music back in the days, they had it where you had to pick, you know, who you was rocking with. Oh, you over here with the black people? Cool. Oh, you over here with the white people? Okay, that's cool. Hip hop was like, yo, I came for everybody. And it was in those moments where, like, when it came for everybody, that everybody was able to appreciate it for real. We just have to understand that when we enrich our lives, through whatever means we use to enrich our lives, we have to understand that there is consequence for So when we talk about, you know, hip hop as it pertains to now, right, we look at like the way that these young people kind of articulate their message. I'm not gonna lie, man, I really got a lot of favorite, you know, artists for this younger generation of cats that make music. And I don't know if it's just because, you know, I was a hip hop artist at one point, but like, or because I, you know, I have a client list of hip hop artists that's you know, making music and things. But I could tell you that there, I do have a few of these cats that I listen to, and I'm like, I listen to the things that they say. I'm like, man, these people are phenomenal. I mean, they are phenomenal, man. They making records that make you think about life. And that's like the goal of hip hop. They've been trying to keep us separated from each other for so long. And like the whole time the clues was in the music. So if we allow ourselves to bond, right, in the same fashion that hip hop went across the globe and allowed the world to bond, then I believe that we can repair the world sooner than people think we can. You know? You know, I got a solid list of people that I rock with. I mean, the majority of them, you know, the young people that I frequent are from areas that I've been to or lived in for a while. But like, obviously it's a lot of people from Chicago. I'm rocking with all of the young people from Chicago. I could go on a list and like just name a lot of them. Some of them you heard of, or some of them you might not have heard of, but I can go on a list. Obviously I like Herbo. I like Durkio. Polo is, he really showing me a lot, man. I really rock with him. King Von, Math Tiski, you know, it's a lot of little dudes. And then, you know, obviously my daughter, you know what I'm saying? I didn't even get out Sasha, right? You got Dreezy, you know, but when I think about hip hop, there's so many layers to it that it like, there's so many layers that you got to kind of peel it back, and then you see what's at the core of it. So when I think about these cats that make hip hop now from Chicago, I always have to look at it from the lens of the people that came before them. So I peel back their layer, right? And then it's like inside of that layer, you had artists like Bump J, you had Black Panther, you had, you know, me and my team, you had a whole bunch. It was like a whole bunch of, you know, us that was like kind of growing up. We are the age of these young people that's making music now. We the age of their parents. So then you peel back our layer. And then you had people like Psychodrama, Common, Twista, Do or Die, you know, Crucial Conflict. You had cats that was like making these records, but they was like talking about what was going on in Chicago. But I could tell you, 2000, I took Adrenaline Rush from Chicago, right? Came out in 1997. I took it from Chicago to New York. I used to be on the train. That's back when you could play your music on the train in New York and nobody would trip. So I used to walk around with a boombox all the time. You could ask anybody who lived in the Bronx during this time, anybody who lived in Brooklyn during this time, like I would get on the train and I would play Twista. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm banging the Adrenaline Rush album. And people would be like, yo, who is that? I'm like, oh, that's Twista, you know? But it's that moment where like, I just introduced them to something. And then 2 weeks later, I would go down the same street and I would hear Twista playing out, you know, some of these houses. And I know that's because whoever that person was like, yo, listen to this. But that's what hip hop has done over the years. You know, soldiers, troops, getting stationed overseas, and they overseas, maybe deployed, and they listening to music that they frequent at home. And then third country nationals and local nationals are like, yo, what is that? And then they giving them copies of these records. Huh, check this out. But then it's that same mindset, because now those people are like, yo, this is dope, boom. And then that's how you get it to travel the globe. But it was inviting. It was made so that people could be like, hey, I just want to be a part of this. And there's no specified portion where you can say, okay, well, look, you want to be a part of this, you can't do this, and you can't. It wasn't like that. Hip hop was like, look, if you want to be a part of it, figure out where you belong in it, right? And then once you figure out where you belong, just do that till you can't do it no more. That there was the most commendable part. Because now I'm doing the records, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do in the records, but they feel better because I'm staying in my specific lane. But at the same time, I'm in everybody else's lane. When we understand that togetherness is the goal, we start working towards things that makes our goals easily attainable. And if the goal is togetherness, I submit to you, we only have to look at the model that hip hop has left. And if you think about it from a growth standpoint, here is hip hop in its infancy, right? Thinking about rock music and thinking about jazz and blues and saying these different genres of music helped me develop, right? They were all amazing genres of music, but they all were semi-separatist in their messaging. But then you turn around and you look at hip hop and you have to say to yourself, you know, when hip hop came, it took all of the things that was old. And it was like, man, thank you for your sacrifice. Thank you for all of these things that you did, which is what we, as you know, the generation that came out after them people, right? That's what we felt like, right? When we think about our elders, we thank you for, you know, you went through the civil rights movement, you went through the Reagan years. You know, we understand the sacrifice that our elders have made. But we also have to look at it with a truthful lens and know that even though they made the sacrifice, it was still a lot about not interacting with other people. If we want to truly repair the world, there's no way that you're going to say, well, I could only be around one group of people and that's going to be the only thing that's going to be the thing that changes it. It won't. It won't. Because you're just going to only look for people that you have something in common with. And you won't know how many people you have something in common with until you just begin to test the waters on people, period. If it's meant to you for you to be around people that share common interests, you will find them and then y'all will be around each other. But if it's not, then you'll find the people that you're supposed to be around. And then, you know, maybe your whole world will change. Hip hop has already changed the world. And I submit to you that if we use the principles of hip hop to circumnavigate our lives, then not only will we change our immediate surroundings, we will then change local, national, and then international surroundings to where people practice acceptance, openness, fairness, and love. And when we do that, is truly at the point where we operate with that hip hop mindset, which means that everybody's invited to the party, not just the people who look like me. Feel free, man, if you like it or you didn't like it, or if you're still on the fence, please share it with somebody to see if they can feel the same way. I greatly appreciate your support. Thank you for showing me love. You know, I love y'all and there's nothing you can do about it. Before I go, though, I feel like Sid Shaw. And if you don't know who Sid Shaw is, then you clearly have never seen Brown Sugar, which is a movie that I would recommend. It's based off one of my favorite hip-hop records. yeah, watch the movie, because you'll find out what song it is, because I don't feel like telling you. All right, so here's the thing. In the movie, Sid Shaw used to always say, "When did you fall in love with hip-hop?" So that's the question of the week. All I need you to do, hit me on social, right? Sean Black 07, SEANBLACK07 on the majority of social media, man. On Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat. But hit me on social and let me know, when did you fall in love with hip hop? All right, man. Two fingers. I'm out.